Joe Tate, and I have a podcast that takes a look back at my sports broadcast career. It's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
Time for another edition of Over the Timeline with Joe Tate. It's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. Rob Polinski here with you. And Joe, I know everybody knows you as the voice of the Cavs. Before that, you know, with the Indians, and you had a couple gigs with the Cavs for nearly 40 years. But in between your two stretches, you had 2 years that you were doing NBA games in other cities. Could you tell us how that came about?
Well, it initially came when Ted Stepien took over the Cavaliers, and I spent 1 year surviving the Ted Stepien regime. At the end of that year, the radio station gave the broadcast rights back to Ted. They said they didn't want anything to do with the Cavaliers as he is running the show. Well, when they gave the rights back, obviously they gave my job back, because Ted did not want me in the first place, and he had to endure 1 year with me. And so I knew I wasn't coming back. And so I made a settlement with the flagship station, and then had to figure out something to keep me off the streets in the winter. And a former NBA referee, Mike DiTomaso, who was an attorney and was also the lead attorney for the New Jersey Nets, called me and said they were looking for a play-by-play guy for the New Jersey Nets. And would I be interested? And as much as I was currently unemployed for the basketball season, I said, absolutely. So I then moved to New Jersey. In fact, I lived in Goose Gossage's, Goose Gossage's house in New Jersey. Jeff Torborg set up the deal. In fact, Goose and Jeff and I met in the Yankee dugout during one of the telecasts I did for the Indians, and negotiated a deal whereby I would live in Goose's house for the winter when he went back to Colorado with his wife. And so it was an interesting winter being in Goose Gossage's home. And his wife, Corna, told me the next spring, she said, I hope you come back because you're the best housekeeper I've ever seen. But by that time, I had had an offer from the Chicago Bulls. And so I moved from New Jersey to Chicago to do the Bulls.
So when you went to New Jersey to do that, was that TV? Was it radio? Was it a combination?
That was radio.
Okay,
so
you're the
only
radio voice of the New Jersey Nets. How different was it to do a different team for the first time, to be the voice of a different team for the first time in over 10 years?
Yeah, you know, it was strange. Although, interestingly enough, Footsie Walker was traded by the Cavaliers to the Nets. And when I walked into training camp, and Footsie was there with the team, and he looked at me. He said, what are you doing here? I said, oh, you didn't get the word? You and I were traded as a package. So, yeah, Footsie was the point guard on that ball club in New Jersey.
Now, do you recall when you did those games, did you have a partner, or were you solo like you were with the Cavs?
I did solo with the Nets.
So 1 year with the New Jersey Nets. Any highlights from that team? Was that Michael Ray Richardson?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, and they really had a heck of a year. They started slow. Mike Jaminski was on that club. And I'm trying to think. Darwin Cook, Footsie, of course. Let me think. Lenny Elmore was on that team. I don't know. But Richardson was on the club. Ray Williams was on that team. It was a real conglomeration of ball players. Larry Brown was the coach, and doing the pregame show with Larry was always an adventure because you never knew which Larry Brown was going to show up. And sometimes he was the happy Larry Brown, sometimes he was the morose Larry Brown, and sometimes he just hated the world, you included. So you never knew really what you were going to get, but it was an adventure.
But when you're doing that and you're with the coach to do that on a daily basis, how does that help you to be around somebody that has all those different personalities?
It doesn't help, believe me. I always knew what I was going to get with Bill Fitch. He was the same guy every game. And others that I worked for were always basically the same. When I was with the Bulls, two things happened. The Bulls went south in a hurry. They were really a bad team. And the reason was their coach, whom I will not mention because I have no use for the man whatsoever. I think he contributed mightily to the demise of that particular Bulls franchise. But it allowed me the freedom to do CBS Radio College Game of the Week, which was fun.
And we'll talk about that move then from New Jersey to Chicago for your 1 year in Chicago right after this time out. You're listening to Over the Timeline with Joe Tate, and it's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville.
Hi, I'm Joe Tate, here to tell you about Hometown Dental in Seville. They're my dentist, and they want to be your dentist for life. Hometown Dental offers same-day and evening hours to fit your schedule. And in emergencies like a broken tooth, they can always fit you in. All PPO insurance is accepted, and new patients are welcome. Call Hometown Dental on Center Street in Seville, or online, visit hometowndentalseville.com. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
Once again, you're listening to Over the Timeline with Joe Tate. I'm Rob Polinsky, and it's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. Joe, last segment telling us about his 1 year in New Jersey after he left Cleveland to be the voice of the New Jersey Nets. And Joe, you do 1 year there. Tell us about how did you pursue Chicago? Did the Bulls come to you? How did that come to be?
Well, Ed Keating was my agent at the time, and Ed actually engineered the deal that got me from New Jersey to Chicago, and which was fine by me because the New Jersey Nets, the Secaucus Seven is what they called the ownership of the New Jersey Nets, and they were always having problems, and they were also rather penurious. Cheap, I think, is the word I was searching for there. So I got a much better deal to do the Bulls, and then the Bulls really had a horrible year, and so I got paid for doing a season that, you know, originally they figured I would be doing about 60 to 70 Bulls games on cable TV, but the Bulls became so bad, and the Blackhawks, who were also on the cable system, became so good, we started doing hockey, hockey, hockey. I didn't do the hockey, but they were doing hockey games all the time, which freed me up. I was still getting paid for not working, and that's how I got with the CBS radio basketball thing. And also I subbed for Jim Durham on the radio for the Bulls on occasion because he had a conflict with the University of Illinois basketball.
So when you were on TV for Chicago, I believe, would you have been with Red Kerr?
Red Kerr and I, yep.
What was that like?
It was great. Red Kerr had more stories than you could possibly one man could have, and he told them all because we drove to a lot of the games around because in preseason, I remember we had the Bloomington trifecta. We did Bloomington, Illinois, and Bloomington, Minnesota on consecutive nights and drove to all of them. So John Red Kerr was just a never-ending fount of information and stories.
And when you did the radio, filling in for Jim Durham, would you have been solo or did you have an...
Okay. I was solo.
So you were used to that.
Yep.
Talk about the difference. How hard is it to transition radio to TV, TV back to radio in the same season?
Well, I think the thing you should remember, and unfortunately a lot of guys don't, is in television, the camera's doing all the heavy work. You're supposedly just augmenting the picture. But there are a lot of guys who do television who think that they've got to be a constant Tower of Babel, and they fill up the screen with all kinds of talk that have very little to do with what you're seeing at home.
Now, you mentioned the Bulls had a really bad team that year. That's right before they bring Michael Jordan in a couple years later. Yep. Do you remember some of the cast of characters on that Chicago Bulls team?
Yeah, when I was on the road, my roommate and people who are really students of NBA past will remember this name, Quentin Daly, was my roommate on the road. Turned out to be a great guy. He did have a checkered past, I'll say that. He ran into trouble with the law out in San Francisco, but I never had a moment's problem with him. And David Greenwood was a rookie on that ball club. Orlando Woolridge was a rookie on that ball club. Dave Corzine was on that ball club. And the fans in Chicago, for some reason, really disliked Corzine. I'm not sure why, but anytime he'd do something wrong, they'd really give him the business. And I remember one night, I'm doing a game, it was on radio, actually, and he went diving after a loose ball, and he crashed headfirst into the press table that I was sitting at, and he cut his forehead open. And when he got up, why, there's blood streaming down his face, and the crowd gave him a standing, oh, yay! And as he picked himself up, I just said, see, Dave, that's what you had to do to win the fans. You just have to bleed for them. And he broke up laughing, and unfortunately, there weren't a lot of laughs in that season with the Chicago Bulls.
Joe, talk about working for different organizations. Did they? What are the similarities? What are the differences? Do they leave you alone? Is the radio or TV broadcaster, or do some meddle more than others?
You know, I never had any problems with the boys in New Jersey. They were having too much trouble themselves to worry about me. And Chicago was a solid organization. Rod Thorne was the general manager. He and I got along great. And I had no trouble with either of those franchises. And then Gordon Gund and Harry Waltman brought me back to do the Cavaliers. And, of course, I could sit here and talk about Gordon Gund from now until next week, and he was the finest man I ever worked for.
So you do a year in New Jersey, you do a year in Chicago. Just talk a little bit about how you came back to be the voice of the Cavs.
Well, Harry Waltman called me and asked me if I wanted Gordon Gund had purchased the team, and Gordon would like to have me do the radio again, and would I be interested? And I said, absolutely. And so I came back. I was still doing the Indians on television at the time. So I just made that transition and went from the Chicago Bulls back to Cleveland to do the Cavaliers.
So not a tough decision for you?
No, not at all.
Again, we're talking with Joe Tate over the timeline. It's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. And I guess, Joe, finally, I would ask you, do you think those experiences being in New Jersey, Chicago, did it make you a better broadcaster or anything different than when you came back to Cleveland? Were you able to, I don't know, maybe learn things from those other markets and the people you work with that helped you down the line in Cleveland?
Yeah, that's a good question, Rob. And I think basically it's you find that audiences are different in every market you're in. I remember J.P. McCarthy. People may remember J.P. McCarthy on WJR in Detroit. I mean, he owned Detroit radio for years and years. Then he got a very lucrative offer, and he moved to San Francisco, and he bombed. Same J.P. I remember listening to him out there. Same, doing the same thing. People in San Francisco didn't buy it at all. He came back to Detroit, and he was right back in the swing of things in the Motor City. And you discover that there are different groups of people, and what you do in Town A may not play well in Town B. I don't think I had any major problems with New Jersey or Chicago, but it was sure good to be back in Cleveland.
The way you talk about JP, not that it's exactly the same, but sort of reminds me of the Pete Franklin story locally.
Exactly. Pete was, well, you know Pete as well as I do, in the years that he was in Cleveland. Then he took his show to WFAN in New York, and it was a disaster. Not financially, he made some big bucks, but it never played in New York like it did in Cleveland.
Well, here's how big JP was in Detroit. When your station airs your funeral, you're a big deal.
That's true. That is true. And he was an icon in broadcasting, absolutely.
Well, Joe, we enjoyed reminiscing with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rob.
That was Over the Timeline with Joe Tate, and it's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville.